it is time for the questions and answers. And let me check the... Okay. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, 18 questions. The first question is to me, but I like to be chevalier. So, how do you usually combine PED with topical and oral drugs children for atopic dermatitis? Maybe it is Professor Hebert, you like to answer to this question, or maybe someone else. Please, Professor Neo and Dr. Diaconese, if you want to intervene, it is welcome. Please, could Professor Hebert.
Could you repeat the question?
Oh, yes, yeah, sure. The question is, how do you usually combine PED with topical and oral drug in children for atopic dermatitis treatment? Did you get it?
We certainly use a wide variety of medications and topical agents in management of atopic dermatitis. It depends on the severity of the patient, whether they're getting sleep at night, whether they have secondary infection, whether they've excoriated their skin, what are the needs of that particular patient. But we will design a therapeutic intervention, I think, that is best for that individual patient, much as you described for the individual patient with the acne. We really want those patients to improve with regard to sleep, with regard to skin barrier repair. So we might combine a topical steroid, the releasable therapeutic moisturizer. We might give an antihistamine to help control the itching. We're getting some advanced therapy in the United States. In the recent weeks, we might, for older children, use a topical JAK inhibitor, which has just become available in recent weeks. But I would say the therapeutic strategy that we design, we try to provide it in writing because parents don't remember everything we said. And I think that, I know Dr. Chang Huang stressed the use of a moisturizer, and a therapeutic moisturizer is so key, because many parents don't understand the absolute need for a moisturizer in barrier repair and maintenance. And I emphasize, much as he does, the strategy that will help their skin grow repaired. Parents often want to take away something causing the trigger for atopic dermatitis, rather than giving something to restore the ceramides, as Dr. Huang so beautifully illustrated. And I think the educational piece, along with the therapeutic plan, can really help our patients improve and repair and restore and maintain an effective barrier in atopic dermatitis.
Many thanks, Professor Hebert. So now it is, the question is for Dr. Bunchani. The question is, how do you make a choice between laser and IPL when you decide to treat cutaneous lesions for the hands, for instance?
And the choice is, we can use many criteria. The most important is the phototype, because IPL is not indicated for Iger phototype. Or the number of lesion is really important, because with photodamaged skin with many hyperpigmentation, probably it's better for the downtime use the IPL instead of Q-switch laser. Q-switch laser is more effective, but with a longer downtime. So these are the criteria of the choice.
Okay. Many thanks. So now this is a question for Dr. Kuang. In your clinical experience, do you find that patients understand the importance of integrated care and they are keen to use it? Did you get it?
Yes, I got it. I think the problem is to educate the parents of children with atopic dermatitis, or even adults, about the importance of these steps, these daily routines. And then I'll explain to them the benefits of the cleansers or the moisturizers, what they contain that helps in help the skin. Because many a times, patients are now very hesitant to use steroids, topically steroids. And by introducing them to a routine of bath oils or cleansers and moisturizers, and to emphasize that these steps actually help to repair the skin, they are more willing to have this integrated skincare in addition to using topical steroids.
Okay, many thanks. This is again a question for Professor Hebert. Have you noticed an increase in atopic dermatitis cases in your experience?
We definitely are seeing more patients who have atopic dermatitis. Now, one of the reasons, at least in the United States, we have many immigrants to our country, and we do see when a patient has one or both parents that have come from a different country, we tend to see more eczema. We also know that not all eczema is alike. Many people are not used to our hot, humid environment, and that can be a stressor on the skin. We know there is a protein secreted in sweat, which triggers eczema. Also, we have a considerable amount of Staph aureus in our population, in the community. That is a huge trigger for atopic flares. So we see a wide variety of reasons why people have atopic dermatitis, but there's no question we are seeing greater numbers recently, and all the reasons for this is not exactly known. We believe in the hygiene hypothesis that we've become a cleaner world. That environment seems to trigger more atopic dermatitis, but we are definitely seeing more children with eczema, more children with asthma as well. The number one prescription for patients in the pediatric realm in Texas is an asthma medicine, and we also have concurrent eczema along with that condition.
Good, many thanks. I have a question to Dr. Diacone Aza. In your clinical experience, would you suggest oil-based detergents or fat acid-enriched cleansers in atopic dermatitis flares?
Yes, I recommend them both. Even in atopic flares, yes. And during the maintenance therapy.
Okay, many thanks. There's a lot of questions to Professor Hebert. I think this is interesting one. So, Professor Hebert, how important is to educate the parents or children with atopic dermatitis?
I think, as Dr. Pong has also stressed, this is the key factor. Parents do not understand why their child has atopic dermatitis. They want to remove the one thing, the two things, often a food that they think must be the trigger. They're often convinced this is an allergy as opposed to really a skin barrier defect, and that is very problematic. There's no question that parents want a cure. We don't have a cure currently, and I'm very clear about that. The eczema will come back. We also have reticence for patients to use topical steroids, that reticence often coming from the parents. These are great challenges. So educating about what the parents can control, because they often feel they lack control, is really an essential element in a successful outcome. When we design a plan that's simple, straightforward, easy to use, although it may have many factors that will involve application of different products, when they see improvement, they get the buy-in, and then these parents and their children do benefit in the long run. But the educational process, I think, is one of the most important cornerstones to successful outcomes for parents. So education is very key. If you don't have time, certainly your staff can embark on the majority of the basics. But I think us come in and reaffirming and restating the importance of barrier repair and use of proper agents to restore and repair that barrier are key to a successful outcome. So keep education in mind. You can't just walk in the room and give these parents a prescription and leave. That is not a success that can be predicted. We really have to provide the education. It's essential.
Many thanks. So I have a question I'd like to spread to all the speakers about atopic dermatitis. So Dr. Diacone Aza, Professor Hebert, and Professor Kwong. The question is, how do you foresee the synergy between ceramide-based product, in example, Rexema lotion, and the prescription emollient device pad enriched with antioxidant-like Rilixema cream. Dr. Diaconiasa, please, do you have a position on that?
Yes, I would use the lotion all over the body and the cream on the inflamed lesions. And I usually advise the patients to not to put one on top of the other and to just to wait at least 17 minutes between any products.
Okay, so Professor Kwong, how do you manage this question, please?
So, in terms of using Rilixema cream and lotion, I put it to the patient, since these are all new products today, I put it to the patient that these are graded products. In other words, Rilixema cream is, the cream is actually for treatment. And once conditions are under control, in combination, perhaps topical steroids, we move on to the lotion for maintenance, so that it is, in a way, a clearer way of managing. Otherwise, when you introduce new products, the patient gets very confused. So I introduce emollients to patients as though they are dose related. You use a more potent product first, and then when it's better, you drop to a maintenance product and then solution. That's how I would put to the patient.
Okay. Professor Hebert, your position on that?
Well, we don't yet have these products in the United States, so I defer to my colleagues. I hope someday soon we will have the opportunity to use these. I think they're very exciting products and they would add greatly to our armamentarium. And I believe we would have greater success if we had the option to employ these products for our patients with atopic dermatitis.
Okay. I have a question for Dr. Diaconiasa. What's the ratio of patients you see that present depression or lack of sleep?
About lack of sleep, first of all, we have observed an increase in this problem, especially in families with children with atopic dermatitis. I think depending of the severity of the disease, in about half of parents with infant with atopic dermatitis, we may find sleep disturbances. In older children with atopic dermatitis, sleep disturbances are also a problem. I'm not sure about the ratio, but I always ask the parents about this. And when necessary, we adjust the treatment accordingly.
Okay, many thanks. I have a question for Dr. Bonciani. Two questions. The first question is about the bleaching cream after laser. Do you consider that a good choice, using a bleaching cream after
yes,
the...
Yes, not just after immediately after treatment, but you can use it after 5-6 days after the treatment, and it's a good choice, yes.
Okay, so I have a big question for all the speakers focused on atopic dermatitis. So please, an answer for all of you. So the question is, when to use prescribe biologics in atopic dermatitis? Professor Diaconiasa, please.
I'm not experienced in biologics in children because for the moment we can't prescribe them in our country. So I'm waiting the experience of my colleagues.
Okay, Professor Kwong.
I don't have experience treating young patients with biologics, but certainly I have young adults undergoing treatment with the biologics, the injection forms. And often these are patients who have gone through the whole lot of treatment with orals and phototherapy, immunosuppressants, and because all these give rise to side effects, they are more open to the biologics, which of course give them a tremendous relief. But also I do have patients with atopic dermatitis, young adults, who have never been through taking oral steroids, oral immunosuppressants, or not even further therapy because of all the potential side effects. And they are open to taking on the biologic injections as first line for them. So it really depends on the setting, the patient's views on treatment before deciding on the biologics.
Okay, many thanks. Professor Hebert?
I would say in the United States, we're very fortunate. We do have biologic therapy. We do have a single biologic agent that is non-immunosuppressive, and it's available for children as young as age 6. We're very fortunate that it encompasses not only diagnostically and therapeutically available for eczema, but also for asthma. And I use these products all the time. It is very satisfying to have a 6 or 7-year-old tell you to your face, Dr. Abier, you've changed my life. And I know that my colleagues will be very excited when these agents become available in their country. I want to emphasize, however, even with biologics that are very effective, we need to continue to educate our patients and use moisturizers and continue with barrier repair efforts, because the biologic is not 100%. They are extremely effective. They are really a life-changing agent in our hands. But I think good skin care, good bathing techniques, attention to sleep hygiene, those elements of care that we provide do not go away with the biologic. They continue. So you, as you prepare to use biologics in your therapeutic strategy, must realize that you must be expert at managing the skin barrier overall. And if you don't use these agents that we've mentioned today, I think you will continue to see patients who have focal challenges. While their overall disease state may be better managed, they will indeed require these topical agents to optimize the outcome that you can invoke using a biologic in the future.
Okay, many, many thanks.
I just want to make an additional comment,
sure. Please.
To what Professor Hebert said about moisturizers and emollients. For those patients who are undergoing treatment with biologics, one has to realize a lot of these patients have already used a whole lot of different kinds of moisturizers. And we have to emphasize to them that there are still good new moisturizers in the horizon. And I find many of my patients appreciate that even though I'm giving them biologic injections, they appreciate that we introduce them better moisturizers that help in hydration, in repair. So even though they are so resistant to moisturizers, we still have to attempt to introduce to them better moisturizers, as we really illustrated in my presentation.
Okay, very good. So the question, a very interesting question for Dr. Diaconisa. Do you believe filters used in social media are creating the false impression in teenagers, the myth of a perfect skin? If so, what would be the role of the physician in this scenario?
Yes, thank you. Very interesting question. I'm not sure I'm the right person to answer. Of course, my feeling is yes. We have to, of course, to discuss to our patient and to stay close to our patient, especially adolescents, and to ask about their feelings, to ask about their social media habits, and to explain, if necessary, what is to understand what is the relation with their appearance, and to approach also this practical problem of what is social media, the use of filters and everything. I think we have to individualize our approach and of course to be aware of all these challenges they face nowadays.
Okay, many thanks. So there's a question addressed to me. The question is from Michael. We know that current topical drugs has several concerns on tolerability and treatment compliance. How do you see the role of topical devices such as PAPEX in your study in the treatment algorithm of acne? In my view, the use of accompanying treatments and anti-inflammatory, maybe non-pharmacological products is absolutely necessary. We cannot imagine to use pharmacological treatment such as retinoids without an accompanying product. Obviously, on one side, we have to use the topical retinoids from the start, not all the days, long, I mean 7 days out of seven in a week. Maybe it is reasonable to start with, depending on the type of skin, with maybe 2 days a week or 3 days a week, and with a very low amount of product on the, applied on the skin. So it depends also on the season, on the weather, on the, so it, we have seen a lot of variants that could be taken into consideration. So anyway, the straight answer to the question is I cannot stay without me, but also the patients. So it is unavoidable to use them, and maybe not only once a day, maybe two, three times a day. Absolutely necessary. So we have a lot of questions, so I move on. So the question is for Professor Herbert. Can the antioxidant enriched cream also be used for moderate diaper dermatitis, in example, in combination with antimycotics in order to alleviate the symptoms? Thank you.
I do believe that these products would be used successfully in concert. We know that many babies with diaper dermatitis have concomitant candida, but they can also have staph. Amazingly, about 24% in one study did have some staph in that particular diaper area. So yes, I believe you can use these products in concert. You may want to put them on at different times. I think that the antifungal might be put on with diaper changes and perhaps the relisema at a different time. I don't know if it's been studied scientifically what timing might be optimum, but I do believe these products should be used in concert because I think you will get a better outcome and the patient will recover in a timely fashion.
Okay, many thanks. So the question now is for Professor Diaconisa, and the psychological burden in patients, which tool would you recommend to help patients with depression? And this is my addition. Do you think we can do something ourselves, or do we need help from the specialist, I mean psychologist on, or so on? Please, Dr. Diaconisa.
Of course, we need the specialists, the healthcare professionals. We have to refer patients, but in order to refer patients, first we have to approach and to spot a psychological problem, even depression. First of all, the first step approach would be just to ask the patient or caregivers about their feelings in relation with the disease, to observe the patient's general appearance, mood, observe for eye contact, ask about concerning behaviors, observe, for example, self-harming signs, and then we can screen with specific tools like questions from the dermatological quality of life index or in simple questions. So we can, of course, we can help our patients by a first step approach and then refer the patients to a psychologist or a psychiatrist.
Okay, many thanks. The other colleagues, do you have a position on that? Can you please comment on this point?
Certainly agree. I think having our finger on the pulse of the patient's mental health is an imperative. Sometimes when we have patients that will pick at their skin, we'll use N-acetylcysteine, which is a food additive, a food supplement in the United States. It's not a drug. Patients could walk into the grocery store and buy it while we're waiting for the referral to the mental health professional. But I think being cognizant of our patients' sensitivities and mental health needs is really a great important manner that dermatologists can certainly introduce the construct that these patients need further guidance and care. And I agree with my colleagues that is part of our job as physicians to help these patients through these difficult times. I will say with successful treatment of acne, much of the dismay that comes from the cosmetic disfigurement often abates, and the patients are very happy. There is an older paper in the dermatology literature by my colleague in pediatric dermatology, Dr. Elaine Siegfried, who saw people who took oral retinoids for nodular cystic acne have an 85% reduction in the dismay they felt about their skin. So what you've shared with us in your lecture indeed is confirmed by that, in that we take these problems seriously. The patients do very well under our care.
Okay. Dr. Kwong, what about you?
You see, the thing we face in Asian society is that patients do not really like to talk about the mental part of it. For instance, I saw a patient this morning and in my practice, and this is a 10-year-old boy with a father and with atopic dermatitis, and it's bad. But it was very difficult to broach the subject of mental health because the father was there, and usually Asian parents, they don't like to talk about these things, about how the child feels. So for me, in Asian society, it is really a challenge. Although we are fully aware of the mental issues they face, whether it's a patient with acne or atopic dermatitis, it can be a challenge in Asian society because patients are not open to discussing that.
Okay. So we have a lot of questions, and some very new questions to Dr. Bunchani. Have you observed a negative effect on the self-confidence of patients with hyperpigmentation?
Yes, it's a really challenging these patients with a lentigo, also in a patient with melasma, that they are really embarrassed from this disease. And also in hyperpigmentation after acne, and the treatment in this patient is really important. And overall in melasma is a really challenge with the laser and IPL. In fact, many times we don't treat with laser or light, but just with cosmetic treatment. And in many cases, we have many relapses.
So I have another question for Dr. Bunchani. And the question is, so I have to translate. After how much time from the laser treatment is it reasonable to put hypopigmenting creams just after the fall of the crust or something else?
Yes, after the fall of the crust, and it's about 6 or 7 days, and then we can use the hypopigmenting cream with no problem, and obviously sunscreen during the day.
Okay, many thanks. A question about acne. Question is addressed to me. Can you confirm that acne incidence starts in younger patients Do treatment change in younger patients? How would you treat them? What's the approach? So four questions. So I agree. I have seen along the last 10-15 years, the age of start of acne more and more early. So what about the change in terms of treatment? Obviously, in very young patients, we have a very fair type of skin, so we have to use lot and lot of hydrating creams, and we have to be careful with aggressive detergents. So we have to keep homeostasis of the skin. We must be very careful about that. Regarding the basic pharmacological treatments, you know, we have some limitations, like the one refers to tetracyclines, systemic tetracyclines. There are 8 years of age for patients living in USA. We have 12 years of age for tetracyclines in our country, so it is quite a discrepancy, and mostly it is related to the discoloration of the of teeth. And the same way for oral isotretinoin, we have a limitation from the regulatory authorities. Under 12 years of age will be not advisable, but it is not a full, complete restriction. But we to be reasonable to use oral isotretinoin over 12 years of age. So not that big difference in terms of concept, but we have limitation related to the age. So we have other questions, but the organizing committee is telling me we are running out of time. So let me thank all of you for attending this meeting. Let me thank all the speakers for giving the very, very interesting, attractive presentations, and also for answering to all the questions we have got about your presentations. So thank you again. Bye-bye to all of you, and hope to see you the next meeting. And bye-bye to all of you. Many thanks.